This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 101, where AC and CJ reminisce about the first 100 episodes and catch up on some of the latest cloud news. Recorded live October 28th, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Good morning, AC. How you doing, mate?
Doing good, man. How are you doing?
Not bad. Not bad. Hey, congratulations on 100 episodes, man.
Yeah, man. Congratulations to you, too. This has been almost to the T, it's been 2 years exactly.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't remember what date our first show came out, but... It's got to be close, yeah?
I think, yeah, it was the beginning of October 2 years ago. I remember we were in Las Vegas at, I had that big suite. I had that big 3,000 square foot suite.
That's right.
Yeah. So we threw a big party to open it up. No, I'm just kidding.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It's been fun, man. I was really happy to see the feedback that we got from episode 100 with the where we let the our better halves take over the show.
Yeah, exactly. It was something a little different, and so, you know, apologies to those who were like, what the hell, I just wanted the cloud news. But hopefully it was something a little, you know, we wanted to shake it up and do something a little different and interesting, and I hope some people got some laughs out of it with our wives you know, beating us up about a few things that we do and having a laugh.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. I know that Meredith and Vicky were both a little, I know that when they recorded it, they were a little apprehensive about people wouldn't be interested in it or they were boring. But, you know, I think it was the first, it's funny because like, I know Vicky and you know Meredith because we've seen each other's wives at different events and stuff like that, but they've never seen each other.
Yeah.
They've talked through Facebook. They talk through us, but this is the first time they'd ever had a chance to really sit down and I guess virtually talk to each other. So I know there was a bit of like, you know, that whole awkwardness kind of a little bit there, but they had a good time. I think they had a good day, good fun. And
And the feedback's been great. So
it has been.
I think, you know, for me, 100 shows is an amazing milestone. You know, I didn't think about it at the time about whether we'd actually make it or not, but but it's been a lot of work, but I really dig getting together every week and noodling through some of these topics and talking about it. And it gives us a sort of a forced time to get together and discuss stuff too, which is also great. And, you know, one of the things about the show, right, is it's pretty laid back. We don't have a sort of a rigid forced agenda to go through. And it sort of gives us a bit of time to shoot the breeze over some of these topics as well. So I'm just glad that other people find it interesting too.
Yeah. Well, at least we hope they do.
Yeah.
People don't just subscribe for the hell of it to fill their phones up.
We really should pull some of the latest stats and see where we're at with listenership.
Yeah. So the way that's something on my horizon or where my roadmap. I've got the challenge is that so we host the site, we host the show, we host all the MP3s and everything all up in Azure, and we have all the MP3s, all the episodes are all stored in an Azure blob, and I've got auditing turned on. So every time someone makes a request for it, you know, it's getting a classic web hit with the IP and the device and everything. But the trick is, if anybody's ever done this, when you go to pull the log data out of Azure storage, it's in this special kind of place that to go get it, and there's no easy like export button. You've got to write some code to actually pull stuff out of the API and then put it somewhere where you can then do analysis on it. And in the past, I've done it using, I had a little .NET app that I ran that would tear through once a month and it would pull all the stuff down, and then I'd copy that into a spreadsheet. But quite frankly, that spreadsheet's gotten so damn big that Excel is kind of has trouble with it at
times.
Yeah. So I'm doing something different now where I'm building a little like web job that'll live in Azure, and it'll run every other day, pull all the logs, it'll create just flat text files for each month of all the different log data. And then I want to go use Power BI to look at all those to pull them all in so we can get real-time stats and everything. But right now I know we're a few months back on looking at it. So it's something we wanted to have for episode 100, but I'm the bottleneck now, and frankly, it's paid projects that are taking the priority.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get to it and see how many people are actually listening. We've got a fair idea, but we just don't have the latest stats, right?
We don't have the latest stats. I want to see not just that. I also want to have a little bit of like analytics on the devices that people are using to listen. Like, I want to hear how many people are on a Windows phone, how many people are on an iPhone, how many people are listening to it straight through iTunes or through Stitcher or something like that. So
downloading straight off the web, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious about that, but yeah, I mean, it's just some stats. I mean, we seem to have a pretty good following based on what we see in like iTunes and stuff, but
we'll
get to the logs.
So to put you on the spot, if you were to pick something over the last 100 episodes that really stood out for you, have you got any sort of highlights that you think, or a particular highlight that you want to comment on that you're most proud of?
Beating you on the prediction for the CEO of Microsoft.
Ah, yes. That's
fair. I think some of my favorite episodes, I don't have a specific highlight, but there are some episodes I think that I really enjoyed. And I think all of them have come around specific like deep dives we've done on Azure features. So for instance, the one we did a few weeks ago with Andrew Liu on the DocumentDB.
Yeah.
The one we did with Stuart Kwan on Azure AD.
Yeah.
Frankly, both of the episodes that we did with Paul Schaeflein on Azure AD as well are two of my favorites. But it's when we talk to someone, the ones we did with Kirk Evans, the one we did with Victor Whelan on doing a SharePoint farm in Azure AD, or the one we did with Ben Stegink on the
performance of storage.
Yeah, premium storage and stuff. So those are some of my highlights. How about you?
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, I would pick one of those interviews with those guys, right? Like it's fun going through the news and things, but it's very in the moment, right? Whereas those interview shows, like I could go back and listen to the DocumentDB one again in a couple of months and still get a lot of value out of it. Yep. And the same with Stuart, right, about the identity stuff in Azure AD. Like that's a super interesting show and probably one I'll listen to again because, you know, you always get something out of it each time. So it was there's a few like that I think, like I agree, I think the interviews will last kind of a lot longer than the news shows, I think.
Yeah. I love doing the news shows and I love when we go on and we riff about those. I guess some of the other ones I think that were fun were, I know last year I sat down with two or three different groups of people from devs to experience to IT pros at the MVP Summit. And I'm going to be out there again next week for the MVP Summit. And I'm hoping that we have the opportunity to do the same kind of a thing to grab some people and to just, I haven't put much thought into the whole, like, you know, what the topics would be that we would cover, but yeah, you know, it's something that you and I have to kind of talk about, but I know that's been one of the fun things is sitting down and hearing what other people's perspectives are when we do those round tables, or like when I sat down with some people in, I think it was SP TechCon in Boston, and to get some idea about what they thought about the forum story going forward.
Yeah. Also like the, our constant riffing on the cloud storage wars. I think that's been fun.
Oh yeah.
About, you know, pricing updates up and down and all that sort of stuff. So I like dipping back into that and taking a look at it.
Hey, just a little sidebar there. There's a bit of news that we saw too that I saw that came out yesterday. Did you see how the news was breaking this week? It was on October the 27th. There was an article that came out about something that happened internally at Google. And it looks like Google is now declaring like internally all-out war against Office 365.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of that is buzzword headlines.
Actually, let's pump that because I want to do one more thing. I want to do one before we – let's talk. So we did – that's the surprise. That's like the highlight thing. Let me ask you this. Let me put you on the spot. For doing the podcast, what would you say has been one of the biggest – like I shouldn't say the biggest, but what's been a disappointment to you with the podcast? I have one very specific one.
I think we haven't done a – good job of marketing it. So it's not really a disappointment so much as a what could we have done better. And I honestly think like that there are people we're not reaching just because they don't know about it, and I think we could do a better job of reaching those folks. So I'd say that's my it's hard to say that's a disappointment so much as a what could we have done better type thing.
So mine kind of ties into that a little bit. And I don't know how you fix this because there's other podcasts that I listen to that I see that they have this challenge and then some of them don't. And I mean, when we go, when we do this, we have our friends know that we do this podcast. And at a conference, I get maybe two or three people will come up and say they listen to the podcast, they love it. And it's like, okay, cool. You know, it's very appreciated. I love the fact that people say that. I am a little disappointed in our reviews or ratings on iTunes. And I'm not just saying like I want 5-star ratings, but I think the last time I looked at it, and it's tough to see between the different markets when you're in iTunes. I know I looked at just recently, it showed like I had something like, we had like 30 or 25 or something like that in the US market. But I mean, I know that we've got a couple thousand listeners of the show based on downloads, unique downloads for each episode. And we've been doing it for 2 years. And so to me, I would like to see more feedback, or I'd like to see more questions get submitted.
Yeah.
I'd like to see more like
interactivity.
Yeah. And I think this is how people like find out about the show. So, I mean, if you're a listener of the show, I have one very, I guess it's one very personal request. And if you're on iOS, please go to iTunes. If you're not on iOS and you still, you know, everyone's got iTunes, it seems. I hate it, but I mean, we all have it. Please go in and please leave a rating. Please. I mean, you don't have to. A 5-star is fantastic. I'd like I love 5-stars. I mean, the better ratings we get, the easier it is for people to find us, and more listeners show up, and the more kind of interaction we get. That, to me, that's going to help on the marketing side. I'd love to get more feedback, more interaction with our listeners. That is really what I would like.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good call out.
Yeah, I mean, because a lot of this, you and I do it, and we enjoy doing this, but you know, it's kind of, we could continue to keep doing this, but it's, I mean, we could also do it and not record it at all, and you and I could just get together once a week and just kind of riff. So
that's true. Yeah. That's true. It is. It's great having the feedback, right? And it keeps us going. So
yeah. So that's the only disappointment that I would have. And I know we've talked about. I mean, it does cost money to put it on. We do have a guy that does produce it for us, as Meredith explained on the show. My wife actually. She does. We record the show, give it to her, and then she handles all the logistics of getting it to the producer, getting it back, uploading it, creating the blog post, creating the entry, all that kind of jazz. And so,
yeah,
it would be nice to have more involvement, because it would also be nice to have a few people who sponsor or advertise the show to at least cover the cost for us and stuff. So
yeah, totally. And we should do that, and then we should also work on some marketing stuff and spread the word.
Yeah, exactly. So that's not us saying that we're losing steam or getting ready to quit or anything like that. It's just, that's a personal plea. So go to iTunes, leave a rating. You can also go on Stitcher and you can leave a rating. We're on Stitcher as well. Just do a search for Stitcher Microsoft Cloud Show. You'll see the show, and then you can just scroll to the bottom and you can leave a rating. You can even be the first one to leave a rating on Stitcher.
There you go. Well, as they always say, the biggest room in your house is the room for improvement, right?
Yeah. We've made sure that you can be the very first person to leave a review on Stitcher. We have not deliberately done that. We would love it if you were not the first, but...
Yeah. Somebody should go up there and just put like first in the comments.
Let's see how fast that happens.
Nice. Okay, so on to some news.
Yeah.
We've been adding to our Flipboard. So go get the link to Flipboard off the website if you don't have it. But we have like we've said before, we've got a magazine up in Flipboard called Microsoft Cloud Show, which is where we've been posting interesting articles and things and news that we cover in the show. So if you're not a Flipboard user, I highly recommend it. It's pretty kick-ass. And like I said, you can find a link to the magazine on our website. So you want to go first? You want to pick something? Or should we jump straight into that whole Google declaring war on Microsoft thing?
Well, that was the last one that I flipped into it. So I mean, we'll just jump into that one. Basically, the article is titled "Google May Be Declaring War Against Microsoft and Office 365." The subtitle: "Microsoft Office 365 has taken market share from Google Apps, and Google isn't taking it lying down. Are we looking at the start of a price war?" So essentially, what we're seeing is that on October the 19th, 2015, the head of global sales for Google Apps for Work, Rich Rowe, he internally has essentially said that, you know, he started asking a lot of questions and is really trying to get everyone internally at Google to focus on Microsoft and Office 365 as a direct compete with Google Apps. And what we're seeing is that we've already started to see a little bit of a price war start to erupt here. So the basic version of Google Apps is going to be a subscription of $5 per user. Now, in the article, it says the basic enterprise version of Office 365 carries a subscription price of $8 per user. I thought it was already $5 per user to get everything. I thought an E1 was $5, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure what they're referring to there. I'm not sure.
I'm going to look that up while we're sitting here.
Yeah, they might be referring to personal or business. I'm not sure. The business SKUs versus the personal. See, it's $5 per user per month for business essentials SKU, which is sort of the small SMB SKU, small medium business SKU, which gets you the online office and email stuff. And then Office 365 Business and Business Premium go up $8.25 and then $12.50 a month. So I think the $5 SKU is more like what you'd be getting with Google Apps, because it's all just online and you don't get the Office clients to install on your PC.
Yeah, that was the part that the comparison wasn't like an apple for apple, right? Because you're right. I mean, an E1 license is $8, but the Business Essentials, which is exactly what you get with Google Apps, is the exact same price of $5 per user per month.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they're comparing there. That's strange.
Yeah, but it's an interesting article that I've heard from a few friends of mine.
No, I think they're saying if you pay per month, it's $6 per user per month. But if you pay for a year commitment, it's $5 per user per month.
Oh, well, that's not really much of a difference. I guess it is. I mean, $1.
$12 a year.
Yeah, $12 a year per user.
Yeah.
But I have heard from a couple of my friends internally at Google where they're somewhere in the Angular space where they've started to get questions, has Office been highlighted by Angular? Like, because we have the utility that we built for like Yo Office, and I've seen that the Google guys have been showing how to use Angular to build Office add-ins for Office clients.
Yeah, enterprise apps.
Yeah, using Angular. And then I've seen, and right after a recent conference, I heard that there was some internal questions that started popping up about, hey, did you guys show Office or Office 365 in that? So they're taking notice. And it's making an impact. And you know, it's funny because let's rewind 2 or 3 years. And what did we hear all the articles? Right?
Yep.
Everyone was like, hey, Google, Microsoft's getting their ass handed to them because they don't have online tools and everybody's going in the Google direction. But now you kind of look around and say, hey, not only does Microsoft do the same thing that Google can do with like web-based apps, but you can also get them on your desktop. And oh yeah, it's a subscription base as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a really, like, I think this is a pretty lame article. It's, and I'll give you my reasoning. First up, if Google want to take on Microsoft Office 365 and all they got is a price reduction, that's like coming with a pea shooter to a nuke fight. Right? Like, that is a move of sad desperation. Like, that won't work.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is it's like Microsoft have a strategy and they're executing on that strategy really well and it's working. And if you're thinking you're going to knock them off their perch by trying to argue price, then you're basically admitting that the emperor has no clothes because that ain't a problem. Businesses are not saying the only reason we're not choosing Google is because we're in a Microsoft contract. And so I think it's a, like, the pricing thing, I'm biased, right? I used to work on the Office 365 team, and I like Office 365, but to me, this just reeks of sad desperation. And I actually wouldn't have done it if I was Google. I think it's they should focus on making their service better and something more attractive to customers, so that it doesn't really matter what they charge, they'll choose Google anyway, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's the first part, and then the second part is like, you know, it's a pricing thing, but then to your point about Google starting to wake up and getting tetchy about Microsoft behind the scenes is like, that is awesome because it means the strategy's working, right? And it means they feel defensive about it. And to be quite honest, that sort of behavior reeks of old Microsoft.
Ouch.
It's sad and defensive, right? And I'm really going
to... There we go.
I'm really ripping into them about this, but that is the way old Microsoft used to operate. Microsoft used to operate by being defensive and moat building by cutting everybody else out of the conversation, right? it didn't work for them very well, and the world moved on. And so if you think you're going to become protectionist to save your service by not talking about other people's stuff, then yeah, you might as well stick to your price reductions, because it's going to work about just as well.
Yeah, it's a good point. There's a good point. I mean, it's when you look at for all the complaining and stuff that you hear people do about Office 365, I personally think I'm a very big fan of Office 365. I'm a very big fan of the Office clients, both like the Windows clients, the Mac clients, the iPad, everything. It's everywhere. It's everywhere I want to be. It's everywhere. It is everywhere I want to be. So I'm very happy with and very impressed with what Microsoft has done with 365. There are a few parts of it that, yeah, you know, we can sit there and we can single out and we can start slamming and saying they're absolute crap, Yammer. But we can. No, I'm kidding. I shouldn't have done. I'm not really kidding. But anyway,
you're not kidding.
But it seems to me that there's a lot of really good stuff going around Microsoft, around Office 365 specifically, and where, like, from the developer story and the extensibility story, you know, it's funny because the place where Microsoft made such a good impact with Office outside of just the clients for so long was in the SharePoint space. But where do we see like the most innovation and the most like the biggest opportunity for growth right now? It's in doing Office client apps, either in the browser or on the desktop. That's where you see a lot of people doing a ton of work and a lot of improvements and innovations there. So that's where you see all the new stuff. That's where the interesting stuff is.
Yeah. Yeah. So this article we'll link off into the show notes. It's called Google is Declaring War on Microsoft and Office 365. And one of the sections of it is Microsoft's response. And it says the ball is now in Microsoft's court. And all I could think when I was reading that is like, all I do is pick the ball up and run off the court, because because I suspect they'll look at that ball and they'll be like, that's a nice ball.
Let's play.
Yeah. I don't think they'll really do anything in response to this.
It's kind of funny. Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's like the ball's in Microsoft court. And I'm like, is it? Because it seems like Google is just kind of like, okay, no, what are you going to do?
That assumes you're playing the same game.
That's a really good point.
You know, so they say, Microsoft, it's ball in Microsoft's court. One strategy maybe to lower subscription prices. Yeah, no, I don't think that's going to happen. They point out a little bit of a price difference. I don't think that's really what customers are buying on solely. And then they do point out that there's another way, and they basically say that it's all about collaboration, and it's all about capabilities and all this sort of stuff. And honestly, like, that's a good point. Like, it's what people are buying for is the capability first. Price obviously comes into it, but it's certainly not the be all and end all in enterprise software. And obviously, Microsoft are doing better at a higher price now. So if you're arguing lowering your prices, like, how, I don't know. I don't know how that will help.
Yeah, agreed. It's not so much a price thing to me. It's a feature thing. So let's just see where they go with it.
Yeah. But hey, I love to hear that Google are getting antsy about it, because it means it's working. And that's cool.
Yep. All right, let's move on.
Sure.
What do you want to talk about next?
There's been some leadership changes at Microsoft. Should we talk about those?
A pretty big one. It's a good transition to talking about 365, right?
It is, exactly. So I guess we can, we'll fire off a link in the show notes to this. And as far as I'm aware, it's news articles and speculation. No, not speculation. It's happened, but it's news articles, not an official announcement from Microsoft, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and these are in Flipboard. We're not going to put the links in the show notes. I mean, we put a link to Flipboard, but go to Flipboard and check it out, because you don't have to wait every single week for links. You can see what's kind of coming in the next show based on the stuff that we're posting into Flipboard.
Yeah, so there's two really interesting leadership changes that just happened or are in progress right now. The first one is the guy that used to run the Office client apps engineering team, so Word, Excel, PowerPoint, all that sort of stuff, was a chap called Kirk Koenigsbauer. And for those of you who are familiar with the SharePoint space, he used to run the SharePoint marketing team a number of years ago and then moved to Office engineering. But anyway, so he is going back to marketing, and he is taking over responsibility for the ASG marketing team. So basically the marketing team that's responsible for Office 365, all the Office client applications, all of that stuff, including Skype, all the client apps, all the server apps like SharePoint, Exchange, that sort of thing.
He's the one that was on stage at the recent Apple keynote showing Office for iPad.
Exactly.
On the iPad Pro.
The iPad Pro, yeah. So he's been running the client engineering team for two years, I think. Two and maybe three, I can't remember. Anyway, so he's coming back to Office Marketing, which is also funny because he used to run part of that team before he went to engineering.
Mm.
So that opened up a gap in engineering for somebody to run the engineering team. And so Julie Larson Green, who is famous or infamous for her work with Steven Sinofsky or on Windows 8 and what became the Metro interface, she's sort of gone dark for the last couple of years.
For good reason.
And it turns out that history's been kind of kind to her, and now she's either that or people have a really short memory, and she's taking over Kirk's old job in office engineering, so she gets she's taking it on as an additional responsibility, but it's kind of a big one because it's one of Microsoft's big businesses, right? It's a huge job. So
yeah, it's like isn't it still the cash cow of the company? Like Office is still the.
I think it's hard to define now because. You know, it's hard to say exactly how much, right? Because the revenue is split between Office 365 and on-prem Office, things like that. So it's kind of hard to say exactly how big the Office business is just as an outright number.
She's going to be in charge of engineering for the Office desktop suite and Office 365.
Well, that bit I'm not so sure of. Like, definitely the desktop suite. The Office 365 part is split between a number of different groups and leaders like Rajesh Shah and folks like that. So it's I don't think it's quite as simple as that. But anyway, she's definitely got all the client apps, including all the iPad, Android, Windows, Windows Desktop, Universal, all that sort of stuff. But anyway, so weirdly enough, she also used to work in Office many years ago, and she was one of the two that helped bring the ribbon or the concept of the ribbon to Microsoft, and Office was the first one that implemented it.
Yep.
She was in Office back then, so if I'm not mistaken, it was her and Jensen Harris who...
That's it. I was trying to remember his name.
...who brought the ribbon to Office, and so she's back in Office land, which I thought was kind of interesting.
It is funny because I remember an MVP summit back before Office 2007 when the ribbon was introduced. I remember having dinner and I was sitting next to her at dinner and Jensen was at the table and it was talking about the ribbon. And then I saw both of them actually went from Office with Steven Sinofsky over to Windows to do the Metro interface, the new start screen experience. And of course, Steven left or was encouraged to leave. And then now, and Julie's there. I have no idea what Jensen's doing right now.
He left the business, I think. He left the company.
Oh, did he? So for everybody that is, I mean, if you're listening to this and going, oh, great. So the lady who did the whole Metro experience is now coming over to do Office. I'm like, I don't think she should be labeled for just that because she's the experience, at least I had with her, she was a brilliant person. She's been at Microsoft for a very long time. The work that she did with the ribbon was absolutely awesome. It's Microsoft as a whole, they missed it with the start experience. So with Windows 8. So that's just, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's hard to say that Metro was a failure. Like the design language and all that was great. Like I think that got a lot of positive response, but it was really the implementation of Windows itself with how the start screen worked and all that stuff that people are pissed off at.
Yeah, it was the start screen and the start menu. That was the thing that I think that pissed everyone off about Windows 8. And then they fixed it Windows 8.1 and Windows 10, you could say it's fixed. But
let's just blame Sinofsky for it and give her the benefit of the doubt, shall we?
Well, hey, one person's there and one person isn't. So, I mean...
In fact, that's a good point. And they put her in charge after he left, so...
Yeah, she took over his job after he left, right? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it just... I don't know. I mean, we don't know everything. The people who were making the decisions knew everything. So, you kind of have to... At some point, you could sit there and play armchair quarterback. The other side, you could sit there and look at it and go... They kind of seem to know what they're doing. So
yeah, we'll see. I don't know. Much more than this, but I just thought it was an interesting development. It's I actually have a bunch of theories that I won't go into on air about why this is being done, but I will see if this plays out.
We'll have to close this up really quick so I can pick your brain.
We can riff on it. Yeah, it's a good Microsoft thing. But so that's another piece of news.
Yeah, and I know we have a handful of other bits that we flipped into our Flipboard magazine. I saw you put some stuff in there about the Azure Container Service to bring together Mesos Docker and the Azure Cloud. You've played a bit with Docker recently, haven't you?
Yeah, Docker and getting it up and running on Azure, and I've been doing a bunch of reading about Mesos and things like that, but haven't actually done anything with it yet. But it's something I'm working on.
We should punt that one for a whole show just on Docker and Mesos and all that stuff.
Yeah, and we should actually get somebody who knows what they're talking about too. That'd be great.
Not you?
Well, maybe by then. Yeah. another interesting one I thought was Oracle launching an Elastic Compute Cloud after 9 years.
It was, yeah, Elastic Compute Cloud, EC2. It's like, I thought Amazon had an EC2.
They do. They have an EC2 already. Oracle have called it the exact same thing, maybe to reduce confusion or maybe benefit from confusion.
Does this company just seem like the dinosaur that is always so late to the party, and everyone is like, it seems like the notes company that's like, well, we're stuck on this technology and we can't get off.
Yeah, you know, either an extremely sad fact or a very well thought out strategy, because I'm not sure of which one it is, but I suspect it's the latter. I think they're preying on complete Luddite companies that have absolutely no forward thinking bones in their body and are still stuck in, you know, a decade or two back. And there's plenty of those around. Let's not kid ourselves, right? So there's still a huge market, and Oracle make tons of money from those folks. So, you know, it's not really a surprise that they're still focused on those kinds of businesses. And so, 9 years later, after Amazon comes out with EC2, Oracle are coming out with an EC2. And I think that they're actually coming out and like categorically saying, hey, we're not going to compete with Amazon. This is not for, you know, just general compute. This is for, you know, massive enterprises that want certain things.
The naming, I don't get. The naming, I don't get. I'm not at all in the Oracle space. I was many, many years ago. I was very happy to get out of it, but I don't get the naming at all. This doesn't make sense to call something the exact same name just because.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I mean, when you're the 100th place in terms of cloud, then maybe you benefit from a little bit of naming confusion and being like, yeah, it's EC2. We've got that too. I don't know. Maybe something like that.
Oh, well, yeah. Let's see. What else do we have here that we've seen? We've got... So Microsoft, God, they did you see they released their numbers last week and talked about the fiscal quarter numbers?
Yeah.
Good God. What is it? Cloud revenue is
$8.2 billion.
$8.2 billion. Like 365 was somewhere around 5-ish. Is that what I saw?
I don't know if they split that out. It wasn't that long ago that the cloud run rate was $5 billion in total, and now it's 8.2, something like that. So it's growing quick. But there was somebody that actually did a really interesting analysis, and I have no idea if it's accurate or not, but it was by Bloomberg Business and by Dina Bass and Jack Clark, that said they'd reverse engineered some numbers from last quarter and said that Amazon had about $400 million in sales in June in the last quarter, which seems a little low to me.
$400 million is low. But that's just in June, you say?
The June quarter.
Oh, for the quarter. So Q3.
So they're saying they reverse engineered some numbers for that quarter and reckon they can tell that it's about $400 million. But now that Microsoft have rejigged the way they do financial reporting with cloud, that they're not going to be able to tell, they're not going to be able to understand this number moving forward.
Mm.
That it was due to them shuffling the way they did the reporting, they were able to distill this number, which sort of, I don't know, like that feels a little weak.
So here's some fun facts for you. So this is an article that we have in our Flipboard. Like it's a 2015 SaaS revenue update from October by Forbes. And it says 40% of SaaS companies are using AWS to deliver their apps today. AWS is projected to increase to 44% 3 years from now, with Microsoft Azure increasing from 3% to 6% over the next 3 years. Now, here, interesting. That's an interesting number. But you know, I heard something the other day that was mentioned in the Azure podcast by three guys that actually work for Microsoft. I know one guy is a support engineer and the other two are in the field. One guy is now with DX, and the other guy is with MCS. And they said something that Scott Guthrie mentioned during AzureCon. I missed this, but that 40% of the revenue in Azure comes from startups. It doesn't come from enterprise, but 40% comes from startups. And I remember, you know, when AzureCon, when we did our little riff on AzureCon a couple of weeks ago, one of the comments that I had that I just get frustrated with Azure and all of their marketing stuff, that everything, all their conferences they do and all their virtual events they do, everything always seems to be focused not around small business or around startups. It always is focused on enterprise. Hmm. But then, and I get that because it's like, okay, well, that's where the bulk of the revenue is coming. But if 40% is coming from startups?
Yeah, I mean, they specifically mentioned that because they want to look more appealing to startups. And that's where they've got their biggest battle with Amazon, is not in the enterprise space. It's startups choosing AWS to build their apps on.
And how do they build their apps? I mean, the majority of the startups that I've talked to, they keep using IaaS. They keep building it up with VMs.
Yeah.
And to me, that doesn't... To me, it's if you're building a SaaS from the ground up and you're a startup, PaaS just seems to be the most cost-effective way to do it and the easiest way to scale.
Yeah,
I've never really understood why companies keep gravitating over to IaaS aside from this is what we know, this is what we're familiar with.
Yeah, that's just they don't know any other way right now, I don't think.
And Azure, to me, has a very strong PaaS offering with a good IaaS offering as well. And AWS, to me, doesn't have as strong as a PaaS offering as what Azure does. And I've seen more features that AWS has been releasing lately that are
more PaaS-like.
They're more PaaS-like, but they're also competes with what Microsoft has already offered with Azure. It's specifically things around directory, around mail, around some Office 365 solutions and stuff. So you see that, you know, Amazon, it seems to be responding to some of the stuff that Azure is offering. They see them as a compete. Customers are actually asking for it, but you know, stuff that Microsoft already has.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, I don't know, if you think about building like, say, Node apps, right? Let's just take that for example. The world's going crazy around Docker and Node and all that sort of stuff. And that's all really just IaaS stuff still. But it's slowly just chipping away closer and closer to PaaS. So it's a next level of abstraction away from IaaS. And eventually, I think... I just fundamentally think like PaaS was just too early, and eventually the world will come to that, but it'll take a while.
Agreed. I mean, it's something that's like, this is where the future is going to be. I mean, you working with Node, I work with Node on Azure. And I think that the continuous integration, continuous deployment story that we have in Azure, I think is absolutely fantastic. And it's, you've seen AWS offer some of those capabilities on in their stack as well, to be able to give that same kind of capability. So to me, it's, I don't know. It's still a good story. It's nice to be able to see both of those guys, both see two strong companies competing, each one offering new features, each one offering, you know, responding to the features that one offers and then trying to, you know, add a new one. It's really cool to be able to see that, to see the improvements going back and forth. But I don't know. I guess I've still got my feet on the Azure space. I still really like the Azure experience as a developer doing PaaS-based apps. So
absolutely. Yeah, me too. I'll finish up with one more. HP's Helion public cloud will soon ride into the sunset. So this was an article about HP's public cloud offering, and that earlier in the year, HP let it slip that the public cloud may not be the place it wants to compete. And then this past week, they've basically followed through on that and said that it's going to shut its public cloud down.
Wah, wah.
Bum, bah.
That kind of goes along with another article we had in there where it talked about how the entire cloud was being driven out of Seattle driven by Seattle.
Yep.
And the Pac Northwest between Amazon, Microsoft,
and Google. Yeah. I guess this makes that so, right? So Bill Hilf from HP, who's actually an ex-Microsoftie, strangely enough, spun it as basically doubling down on our private and managed cloud capabilities instead of HP's, going to double down on their private and managed cloud capabilities instead of public cloud. So they're basically like, can't compete with Microsoft, Google, and Amazon, so we're going to focus on the enterprise.
Yeah, okay.
Which, hey, that's a strategy.
It is a strategy. It's an all good strategy.
It might be. It might work out okay for them. Who knows?
Yeah. So hey, as we wrap this whole up, I guess we skipped it off the beginning. But what are you up to these days?
Oh,
what have you been up to? What are you looking forward to the next week or so?
We are all hands on pump, starting to build and get our plans for our engineering efforts at my new company. So there's a lot of research going on, a lot of learning going on, and we're spinning the dev team up on things. So things are starting to move. It's great.
Mm.
Taking a bunch of time. And then, it's getting more and more wintry. So I'm sort of now looking forward to a bit of skiing, actually.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, it's those two things. You strap wood to your feet and go skidding down a hill.
Oh, on frozen water, we do that down in Florida, but we do it on liquid water.
Sorry, yes, snow skiing. Yeah.
If I stand, if you just stand there, you actually slide down. If I just stand there, I slide down, but I sink and I can't breathe anymore.
Yeah, that's fair. It's quite different, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's quite different. it's funny you say that. That's what you're doing because I'm working on a project. Be fun to kind of share what's going on in the next few weeks, but I'm working on a project and it involves doing something similar to what you're the build and the learning process right now, but having the same kind of thing set up. So I've been spending a lot of time, I know we've been sharing a couple notes here and there, but gulp process and mm-hmm. having all build process and continuous deployment and all that stuff. So it's been a lot of fun. And then actually the last week I got a cool little new thing that is a whole lot of fun. So I got autopilot and auto steering on my Tesla.
Oh yeah, we got to have a geek out about that at some point.
Dude, I got one bit of really comical bit to it. Everyone's like going, yeah, but how safe is it? How safe is this? How safe is that? Driving, you know, not paying attention to the car and everything. First of all, just in a nutshell, it does a very good job of not letting you check out. It's not intended for most roads. It's intended for the interstate, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You can use it on just about any road that's got paint, you know, where there's lanes that are painted, and it works great for all those, but it really excels when you're on the highway. But when people start saying, is it safe? Is it safe? Well, I'm in a Facebook group for other Tesla owners in Florida, and I saw one of the funniest pictures yesterday. A guy was driving across Alligator Alley, which is the highway that goes across the Everglades in southern Florida.
Mm.
He was using his autopilot, and a guy in a BMW pulled up next to him and saw him driving without his hands and was taking a cell phone video, and the guy in the BMW crashed. The guy in the Tesla stopped, turned around, went back, and got a picture of the guy in the BMW with his holding his hands up, just like, yeah, I was taking a video of your car and I lost control of my car crashed. But while the guy, so it's like, was it unsafe for the Tesla? No. Was it unsafe for the people around him that were trying to pay attention to what he was doing?
Yes.
How's that for irony?
What's the moral of the story? Stop being so f-ing nosy. Yeah. Out of my fridge. Yeah. Hey, well, great show, AC. Good to catch up again. Congratulations again on 100 shows. Thank you to everybody that's been with us on this journey. And here's looking forward to the next 100.
Absolutely, man. It's good fun.
Good times.
Congratulations to you. And thanks, everybody, for sticking with us for the last 100 episodes. And looking forward to the next 100.
Cheers.
Cheers, man.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.